One over, channel one over, the Rio Cookie One, the first Cookie Rio, channel one over. This is the winds up the talk after breakfast about Cookie and Johnny and some of them on Tuesday morning, the 25th of March, 1969. This is channel one over. This is channel one over towards the end of the talk after breakfast about Cookie and Johnny and some of them on Tuesday, the 25th of March, 1969. This is channel one over, channel one over on the new Rio Cookie One after breakfast with Suge and Fanny talking about Cookie and Johnny and some of them.
Well, stay there, and once you put it in there, you want it.
Yes, and another thing that Freddy stalls on every time you cut it, you fertilize it.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can just get your shed full of this stuff. I'm telling you, you have to build more sheds.
And it's good hay, huh?
Oh, it's marvelous. Yeah, you have to cut it fast.
My guy, thinking about it from your angle, would you get a percentage of the Bermuda? Work out a deal of that kind?
You know, I'd get a percentage, but I don't want the Bermuda. I don't have anything to do with it. I'm tired of it. I want to do something else.
Well, you're going to keep a few cattle.
Yeah, but I don't want to get my mind on that.
I see.
He can buy it from the
whatchamacallit. I've had enough of that, and there's no percentage in it. You don't make friends at it, and
I'll do anything, but I don't want to make an enemy.
Well, I thought maybe you'd get one bale out of four or something like that.
And I'm not the smart little of the community.
Oh, no.
Cookie said that he came around just as we left yesterday, Sunday, and he said, well, we're going to fertilize this 7 acres, we're going to make all the hay that both of them can use, and we're going to put it in a patch of rye, we're not going to feed grain to all that next year.
That's right.
And he's going to bring his horses over and put them in that middle pasture. And that is the neatest little package that Cookie can think of, and it's real cute.
That's all right. That'll work.
But now let me just basically do one question. Is he really going to have to buy a fertilizer?
He don't have to buy it. It wasn't mine.
But I know. But if he brings one over here, do you reckon he really will buy one?
I've got a little spreader. I can put it out. But you see, it won't be right for me to go ahead and put it out.
But he knows she's got fertilizer spreader.
Oh, yeah.
Well, why does he want to
do that? Well, mine's just a little cedar that you can use.
Well, it'll leave faster.
He'll come to this over here, maybe. Yeah. He'll come to yours.
No, I think he probably got one on.
He's got to trade for it. He may have been working on something yesterday, so he could trade for it.
Well, this is what I couldn't figure him going down and just buying something.
But he hadn't got here before.
This is what I said. He can't do that, so he's got to wait.
But why did he tell Guy? He called him up himself.
I know.
And told him.
And said he'd found one, and he thought he'd just go over there and buy it and pay for it.
Yeah,
and bring it over
really
here
big
Sunday.
Stuff. This was really big stuff.
And what Guy said, he missed his cue because he went ahead and got the fertilizer.
I can't keep from miscuing.
But most people add the darn thing, and you didn't have fertilizer.
Well, I think you can figure always that it does.
One or two, three more.
But at least I miscued on Cookie's truck. That's his truck out there.
You got it.
And it's a good one.
How do you mean you miscued on it? Oh, yeah. I mean,
at least we had good.
I hauled this stuff on his truck. And so you see, he did halfway come through.
y'all will just have to know it.
Well, I think as long as you keep this in the topmost of your mind and see it as this kind of thing, you probably won't miscue on Cookie.
This is the first
he'll
time
probably
we'll look
be
at it.
The one that will have to withdraw because his family will change.
Uh-huh.
And he won't always rule here the same as they'll want to do something else.
Well, you see, this is the first time that we've ever, and it's because of the tape, this is the first time
Brings
that we have ever really tried to see what happens in a situation.
Yes, now the tapes have enabled me to do that. Uh-huh. That's right.
You know, this brings to mind one more character, too. We had a blacksmith, General Umford, and he could do most anything around the shop. But and he's a little bit hard of hearing. I guess that made him a little bit introspective and thinking things out. A lot of bored wells back that time. These long things, you know, buckets that had a trip in the bottom. You had to take them clear out and then put them down in your bucket to get the water out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he just thought up an automatic outfit where you wouldn't have to do that. So he worked out a great long place where you wound up your windlass on it, and it pulled it up there, and then he had a little trap that it set, and he let come out the spouts. So he invented the thing that way, and he invented several things like that. He had that touch this fellow's got.
Mm-hmm.
And the cotton gin get out of shape, well, he could go down there and fix it.
Well, I tell you, there's nothing uninteresting about fellows like this.
That's right. They can do things.
And it's a visible world they live in. They don't want any books or abstractions.
I never tell you, you know, these things, it is really interesting. Cookie brought this old Chrysler, you know, the back end things, the springs, you see, have sunk down.
Mm-hmm.
And Cookie found out what it needed. You can't buy new springs. It costs too much.
Mm-hmm.
It'd just be unprincipled.
Mm-hmm.
A bad principle, but unprincipled to spend that much on it. You've got the shocks with springs on them that are made for that. They'll let the car go down so far and hold it old.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, that is past my knowledge. He said they're costly. He says, somebody has just come to him. He says, this man's going to bring his car in. He wants to take them off. He says, I know what will happen to them. They'll lay up on that bench for a day or two, and one of these niggas around here will pick them up and take them off and sell them for a couple of dollars. He says, I'll just ask JJ what he's going to do with them. You say, well, nothing. Well, he says, I'll just take them on. And you know, he brought them out here yesterday. It's been a month. And he said, that's what he said. And he said he had found out that the price of them, they look brand new. They don't even look dirty.
Mm-hmm.
He says they cost $25 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
Smitty said they cost $22.50 a piece. I said, is that installed? He says, yes. We don't charge anything for our labor. So that's about $30 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite that much for those darn things. And he brought them out there. They're laying out there. But he got to get a little adjustment for them to get them on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were laying down there under the car, looking under the car. I did, and he did too. I didn't know what it looked like under there. And he said, you know, I can use these. I said, Cookie, it looks to me like these mechanics. I don't know what they all know. I guess some of them know a little. He says, yes, some of them do, but most of them just have that the book there, and they follow the directions. And he says, you know, I can't do that. He says, time I get to the end, I forgot what it says at the first. But he says, Helen can read it to me, and I know exactly what it says.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Cookie, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I was in the army with this boy. And we went through basic training, and he never did study, and he made 100 on all of his exams, and I hardly passed, and I studied, because he could hear and get the meaning. Well, I tell him, I said, I can't do that. I got to read it like a newspaper. You see it in print. And we had a nice talk under that. But he's the one, of course, that could do the work. Now, he knew what he'd do.
And you know, for 6 months, you've been trying to get Buster to take that.
Oh, yes. That's right. That's right. Buster and Aaron both. And they don't come through. Of course, Buster has his spell. Buster's got money in his family, not his wife works. And much bad weather, he don't get much done over there. But even when he puts his mind to it, and he Buster will do things for me because he hit it off pretty well.
He's gonna take the air conditioning off.
Yes, but Buster just don't know that much.
That's right.
Hmm.
Yeah, and Cookie said, you know, he said, you know, I don't read about these things. He says I just look at it, and I can just see what to do.
That's what Buster can do. I was singing about that down in the garage.
He
has learned to rely upon what he can see and hear, and he retains it. There's just so few people that have memories like that. And ingenuity to go along with it. It's not all memory, it's ingenuity.
I'm not sure. I think you're born with a kind of inventiveness that sees how things work. Papu had it.
And
I'm seeing.
Well, if you cultivate it too.
Oh, yeah.
You may be born a little of it.
But he could go into a garage and ask one of the mechanics back there if he had a certain type of wrench or a certain type of little piece of metal or wire or something, and Pablo could fix his own car.
He'd thought it out ahead of time.
Well, he could just
do it. Well, that's
right. He could just know that if this did this, then this will do that.
He has the type of really see it and feel it and reason it all out and think it out.
Well, my little cousin,
I see him go down to the furnace and he'd sit there for 15-20 minutes, and when he got through, he had the idea and he'd go put it in effect.
Yeah.
My little Plymouth was running pretty good. It was missing a little bit. It was running pretty good. I could start it and run it to the store, and it never failed to start. And Aaron took it over, that guy, and they worked on it a little bit and got all the points wacky. And it wouldn't start for the first time since we'd had it. It was just awful. And
that wasn't Aaron, that was
the boys.
David.
David. Well, David. That's right.
He's the one that started my tractor yesterday.
Well, when when Cookie came over, the car wouldn't. He started it, but he worked. He took it out here on the road and worked on it before he'd even take it over to Hawthorne.
Yes.
And he said
he
said he'd never seen anything
in
his bad bow.
The points.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one.
David can't even stay the get the points in.
I noticed that David didn't take the tractor to Francis.
Well, Francis, that's another story. But he don't have a plow.
No.
And he wanted to take this old plow out here.
Yeah.
And it's a two bottom plow, and they're big plows.
Yeah.
And I told him this little tractor wouldn't pull it, but he said he'd take one plow off. It won't plow with one plow off. And then he was going to plow it and then plant it. I said, David, you got to let it, when you turn it, you got to let it sit there for a month, and then you got to cut it with a harrow. Well, he looked at my harrow out there. I said, this harrow is not made like that. It's made just for running straight. It won't cut. I fixed it that way. And you know, he looks a hack.
Mm-hmm.
He said, nothing I do ever works out.
Bless your heart.
Now, why there's somebody over there couldn't have checked him on that, I don't know.
Well, that's why I'm saying, just because you're exposed to the mechanics of the garage doesn't mean, you said yesterday that he'd been around machinery all his life, and he'd drop a nut down in the thing and break it rather than screw it on right. And this is where you either got it or you ain't. And that little boy apparently ain't got it. And Papu had it. He could have made a living as a mechanic.
This boy is nice, though. He talks to people.
Just real pretty.
And he comes over and fills up my kerosene tank and a little nice if I need it.
Yes, he does it. And he's always jolly, isn't he?
Oh, I love that.
Yes.
But
he just can't do on the car.
And, you know, you've got to throw it. And I guess they wouldn't come over if they didn't like you. You know,
it
would do
nice.
Special little things.
I know what the chief things you have to sort of keep in mind
for John Winton. I think respect him as a human being. And this was hard to do. A lot of times he was John. And I considered him a member of the family, sort of. And he did too. Except he wouldn't take what the family had to take.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to be careful what I asked him to do and what I didn't ask him to do. And I didn't tell him every morning to clean up a certain way. I just had to let that be his business, and if he didn't clean up that way, I got so the longer he stayed with him, the less I could do. The less I could take him to task and fuss at him about because he didn't do a good job. Because he got so it was his job and he did it his way, you know.
Three or four times before he left, he threatened to leave.
Yeah, but
pull that over our heads, you know.
But he was real cute about a lot of things that he knew that I needed him for, And he'd say, well, he'd sing. He'd sing it out. You won't miss your water till the well goes dry. You just wait. When I get gone, you'll wish you knew how I do so and so and so. I'm saying one of the things was fried chicken. And he never would let me see him fry a pot of chicken. And he right. could fry chicken better than any dad-blamed person that I ever ate from, and I have never figured it out. And I'd say, John, now how do you get this crust so crusty and the inside so juicy and still tender and not dry? And he'd lie, great big, he'd say, when I'm gone, you'll wish you knew, but you'll miss me. You'll miss me every time you eat a piece of chicken. And he came out when Lenny had a little car to sell. One of the men down there where he worked at the Y wanted to buy it. And he came out with him. He came in the kitchen, and I said, John, I am so hungry for a piece of your fried chicken. Do you reckon you could fry up a pan of chicken? I just never knew how. He said, yeah. You know, I told you. As a little something that he could hold over my head, that he really knew.
He knew how to take a cake mix and make it like I never have tasted any other cake.
But there were things that he wouldn't do, and he would get so mad. The kid, I don't know how he managed as well as he did with all of us there living together so long in the
putting
kitchen.
Putting up with everybody in the kitchen.
Yeah, and everybody bashing.
Now, he didn't mind Papa in the kitchen, but he couldn't stand Mama in the kitchen. She got in his way.
She put it.
And she'd look over his shoulder, because he just couldn't stand. So, you know, it was hard. But there was, and like I say, where I go, you don't, and this is Lenny, you don't, the wolf came over, he was in a fix, this is odd, he came over and knew Len didn't have a job, and would Len come over and help him dig a ditch for some plumbing? His plumber didn't come, you remember this?
Mm-hmm, sure do.
And we got Len up out of bed and said, go help the wolf. Well, he went, but it was sure hard, you know, just half-hearted, he just wasn't fixing to. And he did this two or three days, and then Lynn just sort of refused to go. And it dawned on us later that we were using Lynn just as a mule or a workhorse or something, you know, making him do something. It wasn't his idea. And there wasn't any lawyer fee in this. He did enough to pay his debt to the wolf for being a friend. But it had to be sort of initiated on Lynn's part. Lynn works this way all the time, almost. He doesn't count it as barter what he does for his good friends down there.
He loves to do things for them, though.
But he initiates.
One way or another. Yeah, he initiates it. He thinks about it.
And he doesn't know that he's trading on anything, but he, of course, always had to buy his friendship with anybody.
Well, for a long time there, he furnished transportation for those fellows on the job when he worked outside. They'd give him gasoline and stuff like that. But that was the thing he liked to
that
do.
He could trade on
his
car.
He could take them along.
I guess in a way we all trade.
Well, certainly we do.
Trade on our...
What we can do is a little different to what the other fellow can do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, that old John there and... working with him as long as you did, and you know, that's just remarkable. That is just remarkable. Now, that's just remarkable. That is just remarkable. Now, Joe doesn't run into anything like that in the office, not that close.
I had trouble with some of the girls back in the past, and Carl Bennett now does a much better job than I ever did in handling women.
But he, even so, he wouldn't be close like Francis was. What's your word?
No, I understand like what you're talking about, making them one of the family, intimate.
Yes.
Yeah, 7 days a week.
That's right.
She needed John.
That's
and
right.
He knew it.
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah.
At the office, they still got their own desk.
That's right.
And they know how to do what they're doing.
That's right.
And they know they can get fired and somebody else can replace
that's
them.
Fine.
Yeah. I take the phone of voice and explain it to you. I'm just, you know,
I know
just
what you mean.
Firing.
Yes.
Well, it's the whole thing of different. This is what you said last night about if you're going to run something, by golly, you almost have to run it with your family or do it yourself to get it done like you want done it. If you're working with a labor market, you always have the prerogative of firing them and getting a new one coming in and training them and that sort of thing. That's kind of unsatisfactory, too. The trading in, bartering out, like you and Cookie can do, is an awful lot of fun if you can stay on top of it.
Yes.
If you can keep your perspective and not depend on it. If he doesn't come through, the whole thing falls through, this would be terrible. You couldn't, you know. If you don't really need him that bad, then
yes,
this is fine. But when you've got somebody that's half your thing and half your family, like John was, that was bad, and you almost got to where you see it was relief when he finally went off. And I've heard a lot of girls who've had domestic help in the house from early morning till after dinner at night, 7 days a week, like you say. They get they do get in a position that you cater to their
mm-hmm.
when do you have to go
mm-hmm.
and you make the whole family get in to supper and eat and so he can get off. And And I've heard Peggy and some of them whose old family retainers have quit feel the same way I did when John finally, we said that night, he said, I'm going to go, and went down and packed his other things, and then we just let him go. And it was a great big relief there for 2 or 3 weeks. We felt free.
You know, I remember saying to you about that time, we all talked about it a little bit off and on, just a little bit, that they kind of expected to be fired every now and then.
Well, maybe so.
It gives them a little relief, and you,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
then they come
mm-hmm.
back Monday,
mm-hmm.
and they're all right.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you remember?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I said,
mm-hmm.
but I remember hearing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like a little fat makeup. But the relief that we felt that, Lord, we were... We'd rather, you know, we could do what we wanted to now, and we could eat when we wanted to. We weren't on schedule anymore, and didn't have to. It's truth.
Yes, I know that.
Well, I imagine you have you got so much in that groove. You still finish your supper, eating supper around 6 o'clock, don't you?
Get kind of hungry 6 o'clock. We still, yeah,
that's
right. But we don't have to wash dishes right after. You know. But
well,
you get to be a slave to your. To your slate.
Well,
and every once in a while you think that person is perfect at their job, and I don't care how good any person is, there's somebody above them somewhere along the line that needs to straighten them out, like some maybe insurance executives in their companies have to straighten out my thinking once in a while on mine, even though I had 40 years or more at trying to learn something about it. We have a secretary, Alma Baker. That's the best by far that I've ever seen anybody have. And yet her English is atrocious at times. And she writes a good letter, though. She'll say, I says, and relate, you know, I said. But she's got the right spirit. Don has to help train her, and I train her, too. We work together. She's the type that goes and writes the letters herself and brings them to you for you to look over and approve and sign.
Right.
And she'll call up our insurance and straighten out things, and I don't ever have to mess with it. In fact, that's one reason I can be down here like I am now. She'll take care of my insurance, and they look to her as much as they look to me, because she knows the answers all the way through. But we've got a rule around the office that no girl can have a license to write insurance. We had one time, Hazel Chandler had that, and it just doesn't work out. They either have to be employees, or they've got to be on their own. If they're on their own, they're out selling insurance, and employees, they're inside doing secretarial work. So when Don's moved upstairs, you see, and he's turning over his business to us downstairs to be handled. And Carl Bennett, who looks after the girls, had all the girls back in the conference room to talk things over and explain what was going on, and we wanted to retain the business and expect them all to go along that way. And she kept saying, well, she could handle that part all right because they knew her and she knew them. In fact, she could write the business that way. And he told me before he left, now he says, Alma's one of the finest secretaries you can have, but she says, you see, she's not perfect either. He said, I've got to have a good long talk with her. She was talking when she ought to have been silent, and he's trying to put over his message back there, and she was doing something which was against the protocol of the whole office. But he has a way of doing those things. He'll think it out, sort of like Papu. He'll give him a half an hour before he's through, but when he's put his points over, that's it.
He helps her save face.
That's right. He does it in a real good way.
This is what you've got to learn about anybody you work with.
That's right, in handling. Well, I never had the time and the patience to do that kind of thing.
And attack.
That's right. I just bluntly went ahead.
Well, I never worked that. And I've never had been in a position for somebody to fire me. And so I don't know anything about this. But I'm insensitive. I don't get mad. And sometimes I think this is probably sad. I'm not sensitive. And I don't get mad. So I forget that other people do. And so to be natural, you see, and do why I couldn't work with Cookie. It's hard. I don't think I really did a very good job with John, really. We got along. Well, I'm not really
I don't
sure
see how anybody would have done a better one for as many years
I
as
don't
you
think
did.
You can. Well, I just didn't keep a very good half. I set a good table because we were good cooks, but I didn't keep a good half. Because I just didn't want to make him mad, and I just let him have his head. And so we didn't run a very good half. But I say things to people, and I think that because it wouldn't make me mad, it won't make him mad. But it does sometimes, you know, and they take it wrong. And then I don't know what to do with it.
Well, it took me a good while to understand you, too.
Well, Frances and
she's a balloon puncture, but it's good. I needed it.
Frances
it took
and
me
I
a
have,
long time to learn it.
Yeah, we have a great deal in common there. It's like a Bernie Pack reminded me.
Now, this is Wednesday afternoon when I was copying the tape that we made last night, and Francis was listening a little bit, and we were talking, and here's a little tape. This is around 3:30, and that's the end of that morning session on Tuesday morning. And this is a little extra that we just put together here, Francis' comments mostly. As I copied this tape, and this is around 3:35, channel 1 over, I guess. But this is an extra tape now. This is comments as we listen to the tape as we copied it. These are a few comments this afternoon, Wednesday afternoon. It's wind's coming. That cold wave is coming. Be here. Going to keep us cold till Easter. And Cookie's coming to help set that new fertilized spreader that's 20 years old.
True. I've forgotten what really was true.
Are you telling me that?
The word trading on our different that talk about John and what he liked and what he considered. Oh, you talking about the label. And I never had been paid for a job, so I didn't know whether I would be put upon if I had to work overtime or do something within the job from time I was to be paid to time I was off my job. That wasn't always, I mean, considered the job, and we talked about the Morton. And John would have to go over to put Ms. Morton back to bed. She was a paralytic. And he resented it. He would be out in the yard raking leaves, maybe. And they'd ask him if he'd come over, and they'd tip him a little bit, but he once told me that he didn't like to do it because it made him have to come in and clean up and so he'd smell good. Put on his good clothes and go over there and put her back to bed for about 5 minutes, and that break in his afternoon. And he'd get mad about times he'd have to work overtime.
Yeah, now that's the sort of thing, Francis, I just have no feel for those relationships.
And, of course, I don't either because I never had been paid for anything. But I could see how how it and the domestic workers are the ones that sort of put upon more than, I guess, most any other group, because you feel, well, like you have somebody for dinner, and they
ask you.
I make
that
you.
Song like
it is. So you have somebody in for dinner, and John married both who worked for us while John was in the Army. They'd say, well, when are they going to have dinner? And I'd say, I ask them 6 o'clock, and White would serve about 6:30. Well, 6:30 would come, and they have great pride in their biscuits, and so they put the biscuits in to be ready to serve at 6:30. Maybe the guests hadn't even come. And that was just pretty frustrating, because I got a lot of pride. And also, then that throws the whole dinner out. And I remember John, I could tell whether he was in a good mood or not, or whether we were on time or not, by the way he took the dishes off and on. And when he was out of kilter, he slung the crockery. He'd swing through that swinging door, Lord help us, and he'd grab up 3 or 4 plates at once. And you know, he was a great big man, but he moved in a hurry. And he'd go through, busting through that door, and I might could go in and help him put the last dessert on the table or something. And the minute he'd get the last dessert on, he'd be washing the dishes that were there and scraping them up and banging them. I could hear them all the way in the dining room.
I'm
sorry?
Let me tell you, you did before. This time you overstated it. You bust up the carpet. You see, that destroys the whole thing. You're overstated. A while ago, you just took it.
If he was out of character, his lips were where he stuck out. And he was in a hurry. He would get those dishes up, and but he did rile the dishes. And that was what he was telling me, that he wasn't very happy, and he was in a hurry. And when you're in a hurry, you don't care how much noise you make in the kitchen. And he was washing dishes, scraping dishes, and getting the ones that were there out of his way, so that the last dessert dishes coming off, they would be ready to go in that dishwasher, so he could be hiked out to his sometimes other job. And it was disturbing to him. It was it just held him up. And if he missed the bus at that time of night, then he sometimes had to wait a whole hour. They didn't run very often after a certain time. And it just almost got, we didn't talk about this, but it almost got so it was, I was almost afraid to ask company to come in unless I insisted that we serve at 6 o'clock. And I usually sometimes tell them, now John has to get off. And because he was a good cook, and he took a lot of pride in his fried chicken and his biscuits and the things he cooked. And sometimes the guests felt awful free, and would go to the kitchen and compliment him on what he cooked. And if they'd held him up sitting around the table, he would grumble. He would say, sitting there eating those biscuits until it makes me late, you know. And they'd come in to tell him how good biscuits were, and he'd grin. He had great big pretty white teeth, and he real genial looking. As soon as they'd get out that door, his lips would go way out again. Yes, sir. He had a pretty good code of what was proper.
Now, Patty, you were right in the middle.
Yeah. Okay.
Not a thing you could do about it.
No. I would sometimes, I don't know that I ever paid him extra. I gave him a most generous gift every now and then. Now, with the girl I have now, well, even when Faye is there with the children all day, I give her a little extra. And I've told her that, because she doesn't get her real work done, that, you know, it's just like babysitting, pays another job. And I guess she's the very one that wouldn't care whether I did or not, actually. Because it doesn't matter, just her time is worth so much. From 9 o'clock until 4 o'clock, and no matter what she does, she's all right. But she leaves at 4 o'clock, and no matter what she's at, she hurries up and gets through, or she just leaves it when 4 o'clock comes. So I don't put much on them. But another category of this being put upon on a wage labor basis is the hairdressers.
Yes.
And I've seen, I've asked the little girls, because this is an honorable profession. profession. They've gone to school to learn this little trade. And
pays well too.
Oh yeah, they do. And if they work in a good shop, they are pretty well protected. But even then, if you worked up a clientele of regular customers, which of course they have to depend on, they can't depend on just a hit or miss come when I want to. It's the people that come regularly, and a lot of them have standing appointments. But it's these people who cancel and want to come at a different time and want to be worked in and throws them late on their appointments if you're on an hour. This little girl now is so popular, she has a shampooer, does a shampoo, and all she does is sit there, stand there all day, and does the hairdo, the styling. So she can take one every 15 minutes. Now that's close schedule. And women are unthoughted, and if something holds them up, a telephone call. And they'll sit there and let their appointment go 15 minutes and get 15 minutes late. Well, that throws the next 15 minutes to see how far this little girl gets behind and how many people are stacked up waiting on them because one fool woman didn't make it on time. And in 15 minutes, don't get much leeway. But the girls that I'll be sitting there and she'll be working on them, and the telephone girl, appointment girl, will come back and say, Mrs. So-and-so, which is a good customer, wants to come in, say, this afternoon at 4:30. Well, Miss Customer could have come any day of the week. She's a housewife. She doesn't work in an office. She's got all day. But she wants to look pretty, and she just hadn't worked it out. Well, I said, why don't you just tell her you can't take her? She says, no, she get mad and go somebody else. I've got to take her. But it means that I got to stay here until she gets dry. I got to comb her and spray her before I can leave. The little girl says, I'm on schedule too. I have to pick my child up at kindergarten. It throws whole life. And this throws this little girl out all day long because one fool woman, you know, changes around. But she doesn't get any extra pay for staying until 6 o'clock to get that woman out. But she's afraid of it. Now, the domestic is afraid to make too much. In John's case, he would have been afraid to have made too much. All he could do was get mad and slap Happy and sling. He slung those dishes in the kitchen when he was in a hurry. And the next day, this is where little Faye always came in. When his lips were spoke took way out, I'd say, honey, just go in there and cheer up John. Talk to John, he's in a fine mood. And she usually could do it. He couldn't stay mad at her. I mean, he couldn't stay mad with her, right? But I used her. I used her, deliberately used her. If it were his initiative, he didn't mind. Sometimes after supper, this was before he would have had maybe the janitor job that he took later. When the boys were growing up at the baseball playing time in the summer, or even Faith, after supper, even sometimes he'd stay until dark and play. They'd play ball out there with Eddie Fowler and Albert Lyons, the kids of the neighborhood. And maybe he would have worked all day on something that they were going to play with instead of doing the housework.
Yeah.
But, and I look back on it sometimes now, how doggone it, poor old, now John got there for breakfast too, but he never seemed to have missed his bus as much as poor old Mary. Mary was an older woman, and she'd have to get up and change buses downtown, winter, cold, no matter what. And she missed her bus because she was missed the next bus, which put breakfast late, which meant the children didn't get breakfast to go to school because I was dependent on her to come. I didn't get up in time to cook breakfast. And I had the nerve enough to fuss at her sometimes. Why weren't you here on time this morning? And she was real smart. She didn't get mad at me for fussing. She'd just say, well, Miss Hurry, when the bus didn't come, I couldn't help it. And sometimes it would be the bus's fault. She would wait and wait. Sometimes the bus would pass her by.
Yeah.
And, but...
Now that's when you first started out.
No, that was while we were on the pike.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know
which
that.
That was while John was in the Army. But she had to leave. She took her supper with her to keep from working overtime. John usually ate as he cooked and washed dishes all at the same time if he ate in the same time. So he wouldn't have to take time later. But Lord, that little bit we paid them, and they didn't get overtime.
Yeah. John was working part-time at the Y before he started to work down there, wasn't he?
No, he cleaned Shug's office. After he worked for us all day, then he did the clean-up job at Shug's office.
Oh, wasn't he?
Until he quit our job. I think he quit both of them about the same time. And then got his job as well.
Oh, that's my world.
They love more than working. Creation of how they cooked or how they served or how they did something. John took a great pride in his service, how he served the table. He served real well. In fact, I never saw anybody that could get the food. The plates on the table and out. He moved quickly and quietly and with dignity, and no matter who was there.
And he wasn't chat.
No, he didn't like to. He really didn't. A lot of them would, well, if they knew him, they'd speak to him. But he was doing a job. He had his mind on what he was doing and how to get things there and back and get gone. Tried to make him more than that, because he had a kind of make-do. And I think we sometimes expected a lot more than he could do in fixing things up around the house. He could screw a screw and this sort of thing. He was a little clumsy with his hands on this, and his ideas of fixing a table for the ping pong table was real crude, and yet he loved to saw and try, and of course he'd rather do that than dust and mop and clean up a house. That was more manly.
I'm trying to think of some of the things that he could do. He'd make things and they'd hold together.
And then he'd be real sensitive, and I was always ruining it for him. He heard me. I was carrying somebody through the house one day. And the ping pong table was up on these trestle horses like that he'd made, and they were sticking out in odd places and real clumsy and crude looking. And I said, "John made this," and kind of in a snarly, sneering, demeaning kind of way, you know, one complimentary. And Lord help us, he heard me. And oh, he bawled me out about that.
Yeah.
He did it in a way, he waited until he had a good chance. He sulked for two or three days, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And finally, that I had no right to demean him or whatever it was like that.
Throw off.
That was the word I expect he used. He liked to have the credit. I made the mistake one time of saying I cooked the spaghetti, and he told me off in the next day or two that he cooked that spaghetti. Just took credit. He was jealous of it.
It
leaves
me sort of stranded. I think, well, now, wouldn't it be nice just do that over again? If we could do it over, live it over. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't have the insight. Some people must have that insight. Some of the people, you know.
I don't know. It never occurred to me to make the job particularly to dignify.
Yeah.
In that kind of thing, it was just, I guess I had the old Southern attitude that he was just taken care of. We were his people, and, you know, it was just, we couldn't do without him.
And he couldn't adapt to you altogether.
He showed with the children, and he did this and this, and then, of course, as I said in one of those other tapes, the longer he stayed with us, the more he owned us, and so then that was time for you.
Well, that was time for him to be free, friend.
Yeah, sometimes, as I've heard other people talk about, they began to think that your home is their home, and as far as I'm concerned, they are. But, and I never thought that anybody at work for me took anything that they didn't need to take. But so many of them did that it was sort of silly for them to need an egg for breakfast the next morning when they could have to go to the store and buy an egg for breakfast when there was an egg right there, and if all they had to do was wait till they got there and they could have cooked the egg in that kitchen. But they just put that egg in their pocket and they get home, and so many of the old people got to do that. I don't know where the dignity comes in and where we get too familiar on the other in the labor relations, sort of paying for the job done.
Out of B&G, I just put up with him for months and months and months. I went out of my way.
I think Pastor thought we ought to, like to say Pete Harris, I think we all felt we had to be logged for the little team. Even after we got so that we could get out and go to Union City to buy a pair of shoes.
Yes.
You felt real guilty of going to Union City. But Jeter just didn't always carry your side. Now I feel real loyal about going to the White Store. And though they just don't have produce like maybe A&B does. Still, my friend is at the White Store. My magazine woman is a witty woman, and I just have the worst time with those darn magazine subscriptions there was. I just don't have the heart to take it away from her. And yet somebody else could do a heck of a lot better. How long-suffering I'm going to be with Christina magazines, I'm just not right sure. And then I have these feelings of Shugs and his customers, you know. It's like Cookie said last night. He could get something because he was keeping this man's horses. And so you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. He said that last night. So he thought he could get something that would might be needed on, the beehive, the bee shed. Yes, he'd get the first deal at it because he was doing the favors. I don't know whether I'm long-suffering or not, I suppose, but most people, really, I think, go where they think they're getting the best bargain. And I think I don't know whether this stands true in your feed man or not, but if his meal keeps breaking down, maybe he ought to perk up his business a little bit, or he may lose more than just you. Is this man down here more sort of up to date, more competitive or something? Is he wanting your business, building a business to get yours? Or just more accommodating? Or it's just a business.
Just a big business.
It's about 675, and this is the end of that little discussion on the tape as I copied the tape. That's a little talk or comment on the tape as I copied the tape. Fanny had these things to say about John and some of these other matters. That's about 675. And now, Cookie's visit. This is about 680. And last night, on Tuesday night, Faye was waiting till after supper, and the coast got clear to tell us what the telephone call was from Cookie about that spreader that we hadn't seen. And a car drove up. It must have been 8 o'clock. And I thought, Lord, help us, here comes that car, and we won't get to go ahead. The coast is just now clear. And it's going to take us the rest of the evening for that car. So we stopped out there, and the dimmers went on, and I didn't go out immediately. nobody came in, so I went on out there. And it was Cookie and Frank had brought that fertilizer spreader in the back end of that fine 9-passenger station wagon. And then he came in and spent the evening. And I had the tape out here to tape out what we were going to say. So I just tape what Cookie said. And that may be one of the finest tapes I ever saw, heard. And it all came natural, and nobody paid a bit of attention to the tape. And Cookie had an audience, and he made the most of it. And now it's 705, and I don't know what it's... Oh.
And I think it's because I have felt impoverished in that talk all my life, except up at Ms., fruit areas,
yeah.
A few places like that where you just had fine talk. Is that your car?
Are you by yourself?
Sit down right there.
Frank.
He's my sidekick.
I've heard of
Frank. He's my sidekick.
Sit over there, Frank.
Yeah, he's my sidekick.
Like the idea of you saying spreading fertilizer by hand.
He said he wasn't about to let anybody over here spread fertilizer by hand.
I thought you were in the hospital, though.
I was.
That's what you let your daddy do?
In the hospital.
In the hospital.
Please last.
Listen, he's been trying to get me to talk into that.
Oh, those things.
He can't make me remember anything.
That burn dollar a bill.
Fertilizer spreader from. He called me up and wanted to sell me a mower machine. He said he'd make me a good deal on it. He said I'll just knock $50 off the price of both of them.
That's all. No, just the room.
So I got a horse-drawn mower machine. Still got the paint on it.
Is that right?
Still got the paint on it.
Is that right? Bill, you're lucky.
And you got a horse to drive.
I got a pair of them. I
don't need a horse to drive. You drive
with a tractor. It's got the 5-foot cut. Yeah. Good mower machine. I've cut many a straw of hay with one like that. I cut my teeth on one. A number 9 McCormick Deering. Gear driven. I'll never be as lucky.
Just cause you got those good shots in that back and you got your back feeling.
I'll tell you, I just.
That right, Frank?
Hi, in the world, you know so many people who have these good bargains, and you know about them.
I don't know. I just get around. I guess I just get around.
You got an ear to the ground.
I guess.
Well, that must be fun.
Frank, are you going to be a
you
good
trader? You know that horse?
Can you trade pretty good? You can't.
Better horse on board. It's one of the best I ever saw.
It can't be beat.
I don't know why they have to care. They can't keep making things like that are good.
I don't know either.
They got to make something they can charge you $600 for.
I want me a wagon for my horse. It's bad I can taste.
A wagon.
I want me an old big wagon.
Oh, I bet you get one.
I'm going to get one. So help me, I'm going to have me a wagon. I got a turn plow. I plowed my garden with the pony this year.
Oh,
and
Leo, let me tell you. This boy over here at the service station wanted to,
take him on to get rigged up and what to do it, and it cost him more to do the job than what he'd get out of it.
Yeah.
That's right. I ain't joking. Mm-hmm. Where I traded around, I ain't got a nickel in my turn plow. Not the first nickel. Well, I got two of them. I ain't got a nickel in either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And money won't buy him a pony. I got to keep her. I got the harness. And if she's the grub that I buy, she's going to plow my garden. And since I bought that mowing machine, if them horses eat any hay next year, they're sure going to cut some of it.
That's why you're going to grow some hay.
And that fertilizer spreader is going to see that that hay comes along.
That's right. That is right.
Yeah.
There ain't no use nobody sitting down and letting everything go to dogs, because I'm going to the dogs. Ain't use for everything else to go to the dogs.
Well, not like me, you're going to the dogs right fast. I talked to you on the telephone tonight,
I didn't like that idea of putting no fertilizer in the hand.
We'd get it lumpy, wouldn't
we? Because I wasn't going to spread the whole thing. It's just going to get it started.
Well,
I didn't want you coming over here.
You can finish it now. Is that right, guy? Shoot, you can take everything out there and spread more fertilizer in 30 minutes than you can in a day, man. Took it on behind that Ford pickup and dump it full of fertilizer and just start going round and round. Just keep it full of fertilizer and keep it going, about every 12 feet.
I can't work. Yeah, it works. I've never seen
it. It's old.
It's me, baby.
But I pulled one with a pair of horses just like it.
I wish I could buy a lot of old stuff.
I pulled one just like it. It's an old David Bradley, is what it is.
Uh-huh.
All right.
I pulled one just like it with a pair of horses, spread lime with it.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. I sure did. And when I laid my eyes on it, that had to be mine, just like. Because they wear out, but you can go get parts for them. I don't care.
Oh, you can?
Oh, yeah.
You can get parts, because, yeah,
David,
I could.
David Bradley's serious about it.
That's right. You can get parts for them. Just like
the thing is, you don't have to put the parts together, so you see, you're all right. Don't let him buy a lot of old stuff right here, unless you're around here hell.
It's like that mowing machine I've got. It's got the rubber tires on it, the big cleated rubber tires, you know.
Oh, really?
Ride easy.
Is it the one you sit on?
You sit on that thing and just mow.
Right, yeah, I see what you're you sitting,
what?
Boy.
Well, that's good sitting. I've sat on that a lot of times. Oh, shoot.
Now, Leo, I don't understand about the mowing machine. You mean, do you have to pull it behind something?
No, you put a horse's pull it.
Oh, yeah. Gonna let Nancy pull it?
Yeah, Nancy gonna help pull that. Nancy and Blackie gonna mow some hay.
That's gonna be the cutest picture imaginable. They're ponies.
Ponies, Nancy.
You what? Now you wait and see. They're little. But I took a pair I took a pair of horses that wasn't any bigger than Blackie. The last year I farmed in West Virginia. And I cut more hay. I cut and put up more hay than my dad and all my brothers did the year after I left the farm with a tractor and all equipment.
Oh.
I sure did. I took them little horses, and that sun up, I was a cutting hay, and that dark 30 eyes still out there. And they'd take it from daylight till dark, and I don't care. I cut grass for one man. He said, I never saw anybody take a pair of horses and lay more hay in one day than you did.
Leo, please put that hay. You know, sheds, the only thing that costs in the sheds is that tin.
That's right.
And if a fella could just run across, it don't matter what it is, you know.
Yeah.
Just don't matter what sort of roof it is. Well, it has to be metal. But you can just patch it or anything like that. It don't matter about that.
All right, now, let me tell you something.
But if you've got to pay...
Let me tell you something. I ran into some more luck the other day. I stopped on the way home yesterday. stopped out, talked to a fella. He said, "Say, ain't you got a pickup truck?" I said, "Yeah." Well, he said, "I've got 2 bee sheds to tear down in Gainesville." He said, "It's all tin siding and tin roof."
How you live that way? Well, let me tell you something. That little covered over corral out here that you've got compared to
the ain't covered corral out there, I'm for covering some more of the corral out there where those animals stand in the wintertime. It's a pleasure to work with you animals under that shelter, but I tell you, when my boot slips off if I don't walk through that other part, it ain't quite so fun.
You know, it's ridiculous to have a corral and not have a roof on it. It is ridiculous.
Right.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Now I'm about to go out of the cow business, and I'm just now getting a little roof on the corral.
Well, now.
There's absolutely no use of just having your boots come off all the time.
I'll buy that.
This is the end of Channel 1 over. The end of Channel 1 over, and just really the beginning of Cookie's fine evening, his fine narrative. And this is Tuesday evening after supper, 25th of March, 1969. And this is Channel 1 over. The end of Channel 1 over. This is the end of Channel 1 over. Cookie's visit. This is Cookie's own narrative. Tuesday night, the 25th of March, 1969.
Not wood.
No.
Actually.
As you bolt it, and you bolt it, you know, that takes place a whole lot.